The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Good to hear that people aren't taking you too seriously, Howard. I would be worried if they did.
It would be a massive problem if people started taking me seriously. I don't know. It probably wouldn't end well.
And so much to talk about today, you know, both on your side of the world and on ours. I mean, unfortunately, the topics are the same, guys. We're still talking about the same things because it seems to dominate our world so much, but a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. So what is happening in Israel with the third lockdown? So confusing.
Well, the third lockdown is officially over. It was extended until Sunday morning. The decision was taken really only late on Thursday night. That Friday, we were not coming out of lockdown, but that was extended until Sunday. So no real surprises there. We've emerged now from apparently those who count the days. Apparently it's been a 40-day lockdown. I don't know what significance we want to draw from that, but I'll leave everybody to reach their own decisions. Slowly emerging. Schools are not yet open. There was some discussion about the potential to open schools already tomorrow, perhaps opening kindergartens and certain classes, but that decision has not yet been taken. So as of now, schools remain closed. The airport, however, the closure of the airport was extended for 2 weeks. So in spite of the fact that the lockdown officially ended yesterday morning, the airport remains closed until the 21st of February. There have been a lot of discussions about repatriation flights, which were not available until now. Apparently, a lot of Israelis stuck in various different European destinations, and a lot of Israelis stuck in Dubai right now without a way of coming home. I've heard through the unofficial channels that the only way for people to get back to Israel has been to take a scheduled flight to Cyprus and then to literally hire a private plane in Cyprus for the half hour, 45-minute flight to Israel. Apparently, a lot of people were doing that just in the interest of trying to get home. But now the government is talking about trying to get some repatriation flights so that people can return home, particularly from Europe and from Dubai, where we are told there are a lot of people waiting to come home. So that's on the lockdown side. We could certainly feel it yesterday. A lot more traffic on the road, a lot more activity. So definitely we could feel things. However, unfortunately, when one looks at the hospitals and one looks at the number of people who are infected, there is really no justification to lifting the lockdown. We have now more people being supported by life support systems in hospitals than at any other time over the past year, during which time we've suffered now with this pandemic situation. More than 40 people are being life supported on those machines around Israeli hospitals, more than at any other time. And the reinfection rate still remains around one. Ironically, I saw that the reinfection rate within the Haredi community is actually lower than the rest of Israel, 0.9, as opposed to 105. And this is in spite of the fact that we had another 10,000 person funeral that took place yesterday. 10,000 people attending the funeral of Rabbi Chaim Meir Vosner, who was 82 years old, an ultra-Orthodox rabbi. And this took place in Bnei Brak. And I just wondered to myself how it is that the authorities are unable to stop these mass events from taking place in spite of the fact that it's against the law. Scenes of, you know, security police, uniformed guards trying to stop people from attending these mass funerals. You know, you just see the scene, right? Uniformed police against 10,000 Haredi mourners. They had absolutely no chance. They did try to set up barricades. We understand that they eventually just moved away and removed the barricades once it became clear that they had absolutely no chance at all of stopping this event from taking place. And, you know, obviously the consequences of them trying to police it and trying to enforce the law were going to be much, much more severe than just letting it go ahead and, you know, having to deal with whatever fallout there might be from that event. That's literally the situation that took place yesterday in Bnei Brak, a very, very sad situation indeed, even though we do very much understand the desire for people to wish to accompany people to their last resting place. We understand the significance of that within Jewish law. Having said all of that, there is this concept of pikuach nefesh, of the people being endangered by these mass gatherings. Not many masks to be seen, to be honest, amongst the people who were gathered there. That is just unfortunately what we have come to expect and have to endure during the course of this lockdown. Nothing really new.
But there's clearly no willingness from this community to curtail this, because people who are ill and who know that they might be towards the end of their lives, other people who hold weight or hold power in the community, could really give instructions to say, please do not attend my funeral. Please let be compliant with the law. And if that was publicized, then the mourners or the tens of thousands of people that would like to attend would respect that, because that is very much part and parcel of that type of that hierarchy and that level of respect. So it's very, very clear that there's actually no intention to be compliant.
I do agree with that, Howard, and what you're saying is correct, that the hierarchy does mean that when instructions are issued, that people obey those instructions almost to the letter of the instruction. This truth of the situation is that the information, the instructions that are coming from the hierarchy are really not clear. There are certain senior rabbis who have stood up and said, obey the law, don't come together, don't get together to pray, go and get vaccinated, all of the things that we think are the most logical things to do in order to try to save people's lives. And yet there are many others who are either silent rather than issuing one instruction or another, or are actually issuing instructions which are contradictory. And of course, there's a lot of mistrust, because there are people who feel that whatever the government is trying to do may be contrary to their best interests, purposefully contrary, rather than looking at it in terms of trying to save people's lives. They're saying they are doing this in order to contradict the way that we want to live our lives, and we're not going to allow any other authority, outside authority, even if it may be a Jewish government in this case, we are not going to allow them to infringe upon the way that we like to conduct our lives, which is about prayer, which is about learning, which is about gathering together under certain conditions, which is about, you know, giving respect to life and to those people who passed away. And the fact that they might be issuing us instructions is not going to deter us from carrying on the way that we normally do things. So there is, unfortunately, not only a lack of understanding in many respects, but really mistrust. And that mistrust is really not serving our purpose very well at all at the moment. And it's very hard for me to suggest how we might be able to overcome that, because, you know, that mistrust has been built up over many, many years. There are people on the other side who think that the reason that these events are allowed to go ahead, in spite of the police having enough force to prevent people physically from, gathering in these numbers, there are people who feel that the government is tacitly giving support to that community in order to look to the election and to try and garner as much electoral support as might be available by just turning a blind eye to events like the one that happened yesterday. So lots of accusations backwards and forwards. And unfortunately, the truth is probably not here and not there, but somewhere in the middle. But, you know, having said all of that, the truth is that these gatherings, I don't think, are particularly helpful to anybody's cause.
Of course not.
And particularly when we hear people say things like, in spite of the fact that we've got something like almost 40% of our general population now vaccinated, that Israel will never reach herd immunity, never. And they are quoting the fact that 2.5 million children are not going to be immunized, not going to be vaccinated, because the vaccinations have not yet been approved for children of that age. And so while we've got 2.5 million and perhaps even more people, so there's quite a strong anti-vax lobby coming to the fore now. But while we have at least 2.5 million children and probably many adults as well who are not vaccinated, Israel will never reach herd immunity. Mm-hmm. So this whole idea of trying to get everybody vaccinated is going nowhere pretty fast because we're never really going to reach the situation that we had hoped to reach by getting everybody vaccinated. It's a very interesting position to take and somewhat disappointing, even perhaps even, you know, it makes people feel a little down, less optimistic about the situation, in spite of the fact that anybody in Israel who wants to be vaccinated simply needs to turn up at a vaccination station and will receive the vaccine free of charge and without any questions being asked. Every single Israeli citizen of any age, above the age of 16, obviously, because that's what the pharma companies have said. Anybody above the age of 16 is now entitled to be vaccinated and will not need to wait more than probably a day or two if they go online to book an appointment in order to get the vaccination.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. The International Criminal Court ruled on Friday that it does have jurisdiction over events in Judea and Samaria as well as Gaza. What is the significance? We're going to be talking about this at 8:30 in some detail, but maybe give us an overview as to why this is significant.
So this is really a long discussion, and it's a good thing that you've got the opportunity to spend a little bit more time than the few minutes that I have to devote to it. But this is a very, very significant ruling on the part of the International Criminal Court, and there are so many different forces at play here. So let's have a look and see. I mean, on the face of it, by the International Criminal Court ruling that they have jurisdiction over certain areas, it seems relatively benign. It doesn't seem to be in itself a very significant thing, but it is. And the reason is, you know, what were the arguments that were brought as to why the International Criminal Court may or may not have jurisdiction? Well, the first of which is that Israel is not party to the International Criminal Court because Israel never signed the Geneva Convention that covers these things. Therefore, Israel is not a party to the International Criminal Court, but the Palestinian Authority is a party. They joined up this particular convention and became a party to the International Criminal Court, in spite of the fact that the Palestinian Authority is not considered to be a state. And this was one of the major issues that was debated by the three-person pre-trial chamber, which ruled on this matter on Friday. And by the way, it was not a unanimous decision. There was a very, very strong opposing view that was brought by one of the three judges. The dissenting view brought by one of the three judges was a 168-page document that was written that was a very, very strong opposing view. And so one has to say that this is really not unanimous at all, and even the judges on the bench of the International Criminal Court couldn't really agree with each other. But because the judges held in one direction, it was decided that this is in fact the situation. And now that they've decided that the International Criminal Court does have jurisdiction over events in Judea and Samaria and in Gaza, what the outfall of this is that a case can now be brought by the International Criminal Court against Israel for war crimes. That's really the upshot of this whole situation. And there is certainly a very strong case that's already been formulated by the prosecutor at the International Criminal Court who will wish to bring charges of war crimes not only against Israel, against the state, but also potentially against senior members of government and against individual officers and soldiers who carried out certain events. And the main three issues that are being looked at in the International Criminal Court probe include the 2014 Gaza War, where Israel is being accused of disproportionate attacks against Palestinians and supposedly indiscriminate rocket attacks, which Israel is being accused of during that 2014 war. What's also interesting, by the way, is that there is somewhat of something of a double-edged sword here, because the Palestinians are also going to be asked to defend themselves against indiscriminate rocket attacks against Israel. But because the Palestinian Authority is the has been the one who brought this charge to the International Criminal Court, it is expected that the court will view the case against Israel in much more severe terms than any case that might be brought against the Palestinians. So that's the first of the three main issues that are being debated by the International Criminal Court. The second of which is the use of lethal force against the so-called Great March of Return, which took place along the Gaza border between March 2018 and around December 2019, where people gathered along the Gaza border week after week after week. A lot of violence took place in those border clashes. Israel is being accused of using lethal force against those protesters. And the third case, which I think is a much more significant, potentially much more significant case, is whether Israel's building of settlements in the West Bank at all within Judea and Samaria is considered to be a war crime by actually going and building a place, an area, a settlement, somewhere for people to live within Judea and Samaria. This is being considered by the International Criminal Court as a potential war crime. So unfortunately, we don't have much more time to discuss this, but I think that this is going to be the subject of much further discussion, and I have some very, very strong feelings about what this may mean for us as a country, for us as individuals, and for the world as a democracy, in terms of the fact that the International Criminal Court is able to think that building a residential home for somebody is tantamount to a war crime.
Mm, absolutely. It really speaks to so many things, but it is a conversation I believe that we're going to continue having over the next while. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. A very good morning.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.